and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is October 6th. It was on this day in 1927 that the Jazz Singer opened. Now, if you're among my audience that has listened for years and has picked up on my conversations about technology, you will know what's important about the Jazz Singer. Not that it starred Al Jolson, but it did. But it was the first talkie released. Everything before that was silent films, and then we moved into talkies. Also, the kinescope was exhibited by Thomas Edison on this day. He had patented this moving picture machine 2 years earlier. What year might that have been? Think about that, roughly. What are we talking? That's correct. It wasn't even the 20th century. It was the 19th century. It was 1889 that it was open. And on the exact same day, the Moulin Rouge opened its doors to the public for the first time, made famous in song, of course. Let's go on to some general news of the week before we get to the vice presidential debate, the bailout, and then the McCain campaign's intention to get a little bit nastier, apparently. And we've seen a little bit of that already from Governor Palin and John McCain and their ads. In any case, it looks like they may have found Steve Fawcett's plane. If you remember, that went down, how long ago was that? It's about a year ago, I think. He was, it was early September of 2007. So it's more than a year he's been missing. And of course, it's in such remote areas, mountain areas, that when they first sent out the search a year ago, they found six other small plane crash sites, none of which were Steve Fawcett, but previously undiscovered small plane crashes. And now they found, apparently, the plane wreckage and the remains of Steve Fawcett. So it's good to see that brought to a close. No surprise here. Do you remember that train derailment, that Metro liner that derailed in Los Angeles that killed 25 people about, 2 weeks ago? They suspected that the engineer had been using his cell phone to text message. In fact, he sent a text message 22 seconds before the crash. Of course, this gentleman was killed. He was one of the 25 killed. And he sent 24 text messages and received 21 messages over the two-hour period of his morning shift. So they've since changed those rules, but you really shouldn't be driving while text messaging. And you certainly shouldn't be driving a train. A judge in Washington, I think it is, has refused to dismiss the charges against Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska. His corruption trial can go forward, and that means that he's going to have a heck of a time becoming senator again. I think he's likely to lose up there. I don't know that the trial be over by the time of the election. He was hoping it would be, but I don't know now. And speaking of other political news, Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, wants to run for a third term. And most of the city would like him and would probably re-elect him because he's a financial wizard of sorts. He's a billionaire, made his money on Wall Street, and of course we're dealing with a big Wall Street crisis now. Well, it turns out there's term limits. There was a initiative passed by the citizens that says you can only have two terms. So he would like that changed so he could run again, and the people may want him to run again. But rather than submit it to a vote of the people to rescind it, he's going to go to the city council and in a straight vote from the 51 members of the city council hope to overturn what was a referendum put in place by the voters of New York City. Now, I don't know how that strikes you, but that strikes me as not very democratic. So I don't know what will happen there, whether the public will turn against Bloomberg or we're so enamored of these financial geniuses that we must have them as mayor. It reminds me of Giuliani after September 11th. He wanted to stay on as mayor a few more months. He was hoping for a change in the law because he needed to be there for this transition time. I mean, you talk about ego. The idea that the city can't go on without you, whether you're Bloomberg or Giuliani. Hey, if you got hit by a bus tomorrow, somehow we'd stumble on. And I don't wish anyone get hit by a bus, although I'm tempted in the case of Giuliani. I'm joking. Okay, there's an interesting little piece in Science. I won't spend a lot of time on this. But basically, scientists are looking into the disappearance of the ladybug. It turns out that one particular species, the most common species of ladybugs all through the northeast of the United States, C9 is its shortened scientific name, their population has declined so rapidly and so quickly that it is a scientific mystery why they all vanished. Now, there's plenty of ladybugs of other varieties, but it's unclear why this has happened. So there's a $2 million grant by the National Science Foundation, and these researchers at Cornell University in upstate New York, in Ithaca, are enlisting citizen scientists. They're enlisting children, for a large part, to count or to find and document and log in ladybugs to get an idea of what's out there in the population. What a great idea. It's not as scientific as it could be, meaning you it's not like doing a random sample, but kids would be great hunters of ladybugs. Now, the reason I bring this up is not because it's an important scientific story that way, but I don't hear conservatives claiming that this science is bogus or false. We may hear them complain that it's a waste of money. You know, there's only two times that we hear science in the general press or we hear politicians comment on science, typically. They don't usually say what a great job science is doing. They typically complain if, one, they want to make the case that it's an extravagant use of money. John McCain is fond of saying that we wasted $3 million on the DNA of bears, and he jokes that he's not clear if it's a paternity suit or not. It turns out that scientific project actually has quite a bit of merit, but it's an easy target if you want to pick on it, much like William Proxmire's old Golden Fleece Awards, which in fact targeted all kinds of things, some of which were reasonable expenditures, but you can make any expenditure look ridiculous. So the ladybug study, I don't know how people, you know, on the right or left are going to feel about that as a use of money. But the other side of this is that here's a scientific finding that ladybugs are disappearing that I don't hear anyone contradicting and saying, well, you know, I disagree with that finding. I don't think that's right. You know, there's a lot of opinions out there. I'm going to go with my own opinion. But we see that when it comes to certain issues. For example, while Sarah Palin has played it down, she is not in favor. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say this. She believes that evolution should have taught right alongside it creationism. Now, she's played down those views, but she's believed that for some time, as near as we can tell from the reports out of Alaska. And I want somebody who understands science in charge of our society. You don't always get that, but let's not put him in the presidency or the vice presidency. It's bad enough we had, the last 8 years of the Bush administration have pretty much been, if not anti-science, and there's many people would make the claim it's anti-science. There's a book out that's pretty well documented called The Republican War on Science. And we just can't afford any more of the same. You've got to accept authority when it comes to empirical evidence. And if you are going to question evolution or you're going to question global warming, next time a friend of yours does that, ask them why they don't question plate tectonics or cell theory or even the theory of gravity. Why? Because it doesn't interfere with their political beliefs. They only question theories that interfere with their political beliefs. So the ladybug mystery probably doesn't interfere with anyone's political beliefs, so no one will probably question that data. The evil media, the evil liberal media are at it again. The Washington Post yesterday, Sunday, October 5th, has a detailed article as part of their occasional series on the candidates, a detailed article on John McCain, and basically it's about how his character was shaped by being a prisoner of war. And it's a long article describing McCain's ordeal and how he stood up to it. And I don't think we're going to hear the people on the right who don't seem to understand political personal responsibility. I don't think we're going to hear them complain about that particular article. Now, the media is still biased, but I guess they got that one right, is what we'll hear. You won't hear the Barack Obama campaign or Democrats complaining that, oh, they're giving McCain this positive coverage. Just, you know, you roll with the punches in life and take responsibility for your own actions, and you can't control everybody else. But that's not quite how they deal with it in the media. And the last piece of good news here in this first segment, the U.S. has killed a leader of the insurgent group, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They got this guy, and that's one less we have to worry about. So that's good news. But we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about last Thursday night's debate between Governor Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. This is the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio.
Look out! Richard B. Cheney swears that Pat lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter, writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near, look at her whining, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foe? Is it for show, all the right-wing parrots? Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Ah, look at all the angry people. Ah, look at all the angry people. Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all the angry people, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong?
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is Monday, October 6th. 2008. Tomorrow night is the second presidential debate, but we want to talk about the first and only vice presidential debate. Before we do that, however, today was the day in history, one of them, I suppose, that Adolf Hitler denied he had any intention to wage war against Britain and France. This was his 1939 address to the Reichstag. That Hitler, he was such a liar. Also, in 1961, President John F. Kennedy advised American families to build or buy bomb shelters on this date, October 5th. He said they would protect them in the event of a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. I find that hard to believe, but that's the claim. And today is the birthday of Shayna Alexander. Now, many of you won't remember Shayna Alexander. She was a commentator, and in the very early days of 60 Minutes, they had a point-counterpoint, or as I like to call it, a count-pointer-count. And in point-counterpoint, they had Shayna Alexander versus James Kilpatrick, a liberal versus a conservative. And most people, I mean, 60 Minutes had pretty good ratings. Some people paid attention to it. But it was made famous by Saturday Night Live, just as Saturday Night Live is making the vice presidential debate famous this weekend with their parody. And in it, Dan Aykroyd played James, and Shayna was played by Jane Curtin. And the line that was made famous when James Kilpatrick, played by Aykroyd, wanted to insult her after she got done with her turn, the counterpoint always started, "Jane, you ignorant slut." Sometimes it was, "Jane, you colossally ignorant slut." And there was no reason to believe Shayna Alexander was in any way, shape, or form a slut, but it was pretty funny at the time. Okay, so let's move on to a little bit of the, I guess I don't want to deal with the bailout now. Let's save the bailout, because this is related to the campaign and the debate as well. Let's move on to the debate. So, if you recall, in our last episode, Sarah Palin was in pretty deep trouble. Why? Because she's not qualified for the presidency, even the vice presidency, and so it came out in the interviews that she did with Charlie Gibson, but particularly some of the deer-in-the-headlight moments that she had in the interview with Katie Couric. CBS played those over a series of evenings on the CBS Evening News, and every night there seemed to be another shoe that would drop. She, for example, asked Sarah Palin, "What Supreme Court decision don't you agree with besides Roe v. Wade?" And she hemmed and hawed and gave a long answer but didn't name any, even when pressed. She was asked what she reads, and she wouldn't name anything specifically, but she said, first of all, she said she read a lot of things. Then she said she read everything that comes across her desk. In a follow-up later with Hugh Hewitt, a conservative talk show host who a friendlier environment, she called these kinds of things gotcha questions. No, a gotcha question, ladies and gentlemen, was what they did to George W. Bush in 2000 when they said, "Can you name the president of the following countries?" And they named four countries who are, not top-of-the-line countries, meaning they're not England or Canada or France or Germany. And Bush couldn't name most of them. That's a gotcha question. Asking you what you read? No, it's not a gotcha question. You should be able to articulate what you read. Her problem was probably that she reads the local Alaskan papers and didn't want to say that. I saw one columnist that was pretty insulting and said she must read the Star in the supermarket. I don't think that it's that limited, her reading. I don't know if she reads a daily paper or not, or if she did as governor. I would think you'd have to be governor. But my guess is she read local Alaskan papers, and she didn't want to be painted as provincial. And I don't know why she just didn't claim the New York Times. In any case, in the follow-up with Hugh Hewitt, she did claim that she read the New York Times, the Washington Post, other papers, and, wait for it, The Economist. Ladies and gentlemen, I got news for you, but Sarah Palin does not read The Economist. I already know that without doing any investigative reporting. Oh, has she been given an article out of it in the last few weeks since? Yeah, possibly. But she doesn't read The Economist. I don't read The Economist. I don't even claim to read The New York Times. And I have a subscription to The Times, and I go online and read an article, every so often, a few a week. But I wouldn't claim I read The New York Times. When I lived in New Jersey, I used to get The New York Times. I stopped after about a year because I couldn't keep up with it. There's just too much information, too many detailed articles. And I felt guilty. I would stack the good articles and sections up that I hadn't got to, and the pile got bigger and bigger, and I felt bad. It was ruining my self-esteem. So I stopped the New York Times, and I got the Newark Star-Ledger. I was living in New Jersey at the time. And the Star-Ledger is a heck of a paper. It's not quite on the par with the Washington Post, which I get delivered on my doorstep currently, but it is better than a lot of papers I've seen, including cities I've lived in, like the St. Louis and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Rochester, New York Democrat and Chronicle, a whole bunch of papers. It is better than. In any case, back to the the problem. So before the debate, Palin was a little bit on the ropes, okay, when asked if Palin had the kind of experience it takes to serve effectively as president. 35% of the country said yes, 60% said no. For example, to compare Biden, twice as many people said Biden has the qualifications or the kind of experience necessary. 70% said he has it. How 23% of the country can say he doesn't have the experience necessary to serve as president, I don't know. You have to believe that is the conservative Republicans that want to make the polls come out a little even more even for Palin. But what's most telling is that Democrats, of course, support their own candidate and Republicans support their own candidate, typically, okay? But so you look at the independents. And in among the independents, this is where it comes out. And it comes out pretty much where it was. 69% say Biden has the experience. Only 32% say Palin has the experience necessary. And so Palin gets pretty good numbers for, does she understand the problems of people like you? She and Biden both get in the range of 58%. But when it comes to understanding complex issues, Biden gets much higher numbers. So she starts with this negative, and the original positive, the idea that Sarah Palin was a catalyst and a shot in the arm to the McCain campaign, it's certainly true with the Republican base, but the question comes down to what happens after that? What happens with this, with the swing voters? Has McCain helped himself at all by choosing her? And I think the answer is pretty clearly no, but the Republicans are still hopeful about that. So we'll see how that plays out. But let's go on to the debate itself. Okay, so in the debate itself, Palin and Biden made any number of claims and counterclaims, some of them misclaims. Okay, let's start with Biden, for example. I'm not going to go into the details on this one, but Biden misrepresented McCain's health care plan. He only focused on the negative side of that, okay, and suggested that millions of Americans will be worse off under the McCain campaign, but he overlooked the benefits, you know, and I'll leave it at that. Palin took credit for the pipeline, the Alaska pipeline, right? She said, quote, "We're building a nearly $40 billion natural gas pipeline, which is North America's largest and most expensive infrastructure project ever, to flow those sources of energy into hungry markets." She used the phrase in the last week or so, hungry markets, several times. I think it's interesting. I don't know if they're trying to personalize or anthropomorphize, make it human, make markets human. But markets are not hungry. I got news for you. Anyway, what's interesting about that, of course, is this Alaska pipeline deal has dated since the 1970s, okay? Now, no piece of the pipeline has been built yet. None of it's been laid. And she walked away from the deal that had been negotiated by the previous governor, so it set the project back, actually. Now, you could get a better deal, perhaps, but basically, we don't have a deal yet on the Alaskan pipeline. So she's touting this as an accomplishment when, in fact, nothing has been done or decided yet. I shouldn't say nothing's been done. We are a long ways from having that settled. So we'll see what happens there. Let's see. I guess the summary of the debate is this. And there were plenty of other misstatements, okay, by Palin. But mostly she didn't answer the questions. She was smart in this regard. She came out early and announced she wasn't going to answer the questions. And when Joe Biden says, "I noticed she didn't answer the question," she came back and said, well, yeah, I got, you know, I'm not going to necessarily answer your questions or the moderators even. I'm going to talk straight to the American people. So there's value in that, meaning it was a smart play by her, because you don't want people, as they're sitting there watching at home, saying in their head, wait a minute, she didn't answer that question either. She didn't answer that. What's wrong? So she preempted it by saying, I'm not planning to answer some of these questions. I want to talk about other subjects, and I won't be dictated to. So she looks strong also. The other thing is, to her credit, Sarah Palin came off pretty well in this whole thing. That is, she didn't have any major gaffes. She was fairly articulate. I mean, when you listen to some of her sentences or even phrases that weren't sentences, she is a little bit mixed up or confused. She tends to throw in three or four talking points and try and tie them together, even when they don't necessarily go together. And so, you know, she has limited ability to make a coherent argument. The other thing about it is that she has limited command of the facts, and so she tends to talk in generalities about a particular issue. When she talks about Israel, it's we must support Israel, and goes to general principles, but doesn't actually say much in that specific, whereas Biden, of course, can give you quite a bit that specific. And she's constantly saying, John McCain will do this. You know, John McCain and I are mavericks, and we'll go to Washington and shake things up. John McCain and I believe in a strong military and funding the troops. When we come back, we'll talk about another aspect of the debate, this issue of whether or not Barack Obama voted to defund the troops. It's not true, by the way, but Sarah Palin made the claim, so we'll address it. The Andy Finn Show will be back after this.